Today's Breathcast guest is Mr. Laird Hamilton. If you don't know who Laird Hamilton is, he's arguably one of the world's top big wave surfers. He is big into breath work. He has his own company. They have breath work courses on there. And he is just a guy that is just obsessed with health optimization and just an all-round lovely person trying to live a great life. I'm not sponsored by Laird at all. I wish I was. But I've been taking the Laird Superfood Turmeric Cream on it, if you can see that there, in my coffee instead of milk or anything else. It's really delicious and really great. I first heard about that on Joe Rogan and been picking it up in the UK on Amazon. I'll pop a link below. I'm so privileged that Laird said yes to coming on my Breathcast. And if you enjoy this 1% of the, you know, of what I got in terms of enjoyment and knowledge, then it was totally worth it. It was an absolute dream come true to be able to ask this legend some questions about breathing, the mind, the body, the soul, the spirit, all those things. And I really hope you enjoy it. I'm going to stop yabbering on now because I know I'm delaying us from the conversation with Laird. So let's get stuck into the Breathcast. Thank you all so much for watching and being part of this. Here's Laird. Cheers. Okay, so yeah, we are recording. So Laird, thank you so much for being on the Take a Deep Breath podcast. It's a real honor and a privilege to have you here, and I'm really excited to get stuck in and start talking to you about breath, about the ocean, and about life itself. So yeah, big thank you. How are you doing today, sir? You well?
I'm very well. I like the name of your podcast, Take a Deep Breath. That's right up my line. That's right. Yeah.
Fantastic.
That's in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, I love it too, and I just think you can use it for so many different things. But yeah, you know, let's get that lovely breath.
It's a metaphor for life.
Yeah, fantastic. Let's start straight there then. So, what I'm keen to know from you is, being, you know, a surfer, at what point did your life go from I need to get better at breathing because it's going to help me survive? At what point did it become breath work for you, and what was that journey like? Could you just share a bit of that with us?
You know, I think that, you know, I think that it wasn't till, as, you know, I would say as of recent, but in the last probably, I don't know, maybe, you know, 15 or 20 years, something like that. It would be, I mean, as of recent, when I say 15 or 20 years, but I, when I was a kid, you know, I think we were doing a lot of things because we were in the ocean and we were doing breath holding stuff, and we did like forms of breath training. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't really identified. It wasn't like we identified it and say, yeah, well, we're doing this pattern and this breathing. And we also didn't maybe understand the ramifications of doing it correctly and incorrectly. And so I think that was a, you know, that came more as of recent, I think, kind of, as this, the whole resurgence of breathing in general has come around. I mean, I was doing some of it, you know, in martial arts. You did some of it in yoga. Of course you do, you know, you're so breathing, you know, breathing conscious. I call it, you know, breathing conscious. And then swimming, of course. Swimming is, you know, those are places where in those three different things, you're really conscious of your breath, right?
Yes.
And then the rest of the time, I call it free breathing, which is kind of, you know, you just kind of are oblivious to the fact that air is going in and out. But I would say just at more as of recent, you know, more and really getting kind of, you know, into specifics in the last, I would say 10 years would be, okay, more, you know, where I've started to have an interest in the science of it.
Okay. And I would love to know your thoughts on this. Why do you think that we are able to consciously change our breath? What do you think is evolutionary reasons why we can do that?
You know, I think it was obviously, you know, why we do all the things we do were based ultimately on survival. Mm. So I think that it was somewhere along the line, having control over our breath, conscious control over our breath, really allowed us to do some unique things. I think it had something to do with hunting. I obviously think it had something to do with, it had some stuff to do with the relationship between kind of you know, being amphibious, that where we were, you know, on land, and then we're in, and then the different environments that we were in, you know, as we go into high altitude areas, or being in hot environments, or being in cold environments. I think all of those things. And then also, you know, even, you know, I could say even other things like, you know, being around fire, and places where you had to hold your breath to kind of deal with scent or something. I just think there's a lot of layers to that.
Yeah. A lot of needs to be able to adjust, to adapt to those different environments. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why we've thrived so much then as a species. Absolutely. I apologize. I'm going to bounce around a little bit I'm fanboying out right now of being able to talk to you. So, Patrick McEwen, Oxygen Advantage, and I know you know Patrick, and I've qualified as an Oxygen Advantage instructor this year, so it's my privilege to work with him and spend a lot of time learning, and love that. And a couple of years before that, I got to spend a week with Wim Hof, and so you've got breath work, different sides. And my first question, I guess, is when it comes to altitude, I know that both of them kind of work, but they're very different modalities. One's lots of breaths in, the other one is slow nasal breathing. Have you got any thoughts or any experience of altitude and breath work, and what sort of things have you done there?
Well, you know, the truth is, I think that altitude, I mean, we know we can train for altitude at sea level. Like, we know through different breath patterns, we can train. You know, I think whenever you're, you know, if you think about altitude, think about, you just have less oxygen, right? There's just less air there, mm-hmm. up there. So your tolerance for less air will dictate, you know, if you have great tolerance for having less air anywhere, it's going to be beneficial at altitude. And so I think, and then it has to do with the efficiency of the system as well. And as you become more efficient, then you can deal with less oxygen because you're more efficient. So you can extract more oxygen out of less oxygen, or kind of more oxygen out of less air. So I think that there's that, I think that's why all the modalities in a way have a certain benefit in that environment. And I'm not a scientist. I have been at altitude. I go into altitude. I've hiked at some altitude. I helicopter snowboard over the years, so I've been into some big mountains, and I've done some biking at altitude and some physical, you know, kind of higher exertion stuff. So yeah, I think that's why both modalities work. I think at the end of the day, I think it's about the efficiency of the system. The more efficiency, you know, the more efficient your cardiovascular system is, the more efficient it is. It means it's going to be able to handle the stress of higher levels of CO2 from output, less oxygen in the air, which in a way, those are almost the same thing. Yeah. That's what I just intuitively sense why both those different techniques would work. And there's probably, and listen, you could probably do apnea would work, and forms of holotropic, which is similar a little bit to Wim's, you know, like Tummo breath, air restriction, you know, breathing, nasal breathing, less volume, higher levels of CO2. I mean, they're all kind of, they all kind of merge in the same place. And so that's why I believe that they, you know, that they're all beneficial, you know, and it's, I mean, for me, I feel like there's so many different modalities. I think it's important not to get caught up in any one thing, like our way is the only way and that's the way. And I think that always is a limitation in life, when you kind of let your, maybe your ego, or let your, you know, this is the only way. Like, what do we always say, that absolutes are always dangerous. You know, when somebody goes, this is absolutely the only way, you're kind of like, okay, well, that doesn't work.
it's a red flag, isn't it, when somebody says this is the only way to do something? Yeah.
Because usually that's connected to thinking you know something, and then it cuts into your willingness to learn. So then I'm always worried if somebody's doesn't think they need to learn anymore.
Yeah, I'll give you two martial arts references now, which I think are relevant. Number one, I always try to adopt a white belt mentality to everything, because the minute I start thinking I know something, I realize I don't know anything. And number two is, with these modalities, I'm very much of the thinking of, actually, it's a mixed martial arts approach to breath work as well, because there's all these different things going on. And I still feel we're so early in our learning or relearning of these breath works. There's not one thing, is there? They're all different things you can pull at different times, which is what makes it so exciting. Where do you think we'll be with breath work in another 10 or 20 years? Any thoughts on what the future of it might look like?
Well, I think I think it's going to really affect health and performance. You know, I mean, I think the health aspect of it, I think we've benefited from the health aspect in the past when we weren't concerned about our health, but now that health, you know, is becoming such a, you know, it's on the forefront because we're living in such harsh environments now. And I don't mean environmentally harsh, but just more harsh environments from, you know, from pollution and other kind of, you know, just other bombardments. We're being bombarded at, you know, yes, from every angle, quality of water, quality of air, you know, electromagnetic fields. I mean, it just doesn't, there's no end to the bombardment. So we're becoming really health conscious. And I think, and I have a feeling that breath is going to be one of the things that really helps us in it. And then performance, you know, I see it being, you know, useful in performance. I thought, you know, I wonder what it will be like when, you know, you grow up as a little kid and you're implementing, and it's probably, you know, and it's probably like that for the monks that, you know, that practice Tummo in the top of the mountain, and, you know, they can dry wet blankets at night in the, you know, frozen snow.
Yes.
I think we'll be able to, you know, that kind of stuff, but I think there'll be feats. I mean, Wim, it has done some feats, and there's other people that have done some incredible feats kind of based around breath work. I think that those things will continue to evolve as well.
Yeah, because when I was speaking to Patrick, he was saying, you know, I think he's been involved in breathwork for 20 years. And it's probably really the only 4 or 5 that there's been this kind of mass media. So I say mass, it feels like mass to me, because all I think about is breathwork. But there's definitely a rise of breathwork. And I look forward to the day you go to the doctor's office and they say to you, you don't need any pills, just go home, shut your mouth, tape it up at night, do some nose breathing, maybe go for a walk, maybe close one nostril. And I think maybe we'll get there one day in the future. Obviously, we're not there yet. But I think it's quite exciting as we move forward, things like this and stretching start to be something that we can start to prescribe more and more because it's free. So for you then, when it comes to your kind of breathwork routines, what do you do? What are the things that you take care of on a daily, weekly, monthly basis?
Well, a lot of my, you know, a lot of my training incorporates conscious breath work or conscious breath patterns within the workouts. So, you know, whether, you know, I'll do some breath holding stuff cardiovascularly, like, you know, like I'll do some cardio activities and do intermittent breath holds while I'm doing it. I'll do a nose pattern, you know, in a high exertion, you know, mountain biking or some other kind of rowing or some other kind of, you know, demanding thing. And then a lot of the stuff we do in the pool are all breath, kind of, I call them regulated breath patterns.
Right.
The stuff that we're doing in the pool, like a swimmer, where you only can breathe when if you're breathing every third stroke or every seventh stroke or every fourth stroke, or, you know, those are really nice fixed patterns. And I think those are highly beneficial. And then I just do specific breath work. You know, I've been lately spending a lot of time, you know, focusing on exhale holds, doing a lot of exhale holding, patterns of exhale holds. And then I'll do patterns of inhale holds and then just heavy ventilation. And then get down into real minimalization, like minimizing the amount of air you're taking in, just to feel that urgency. so I have a, you know, I get bored easy. So I have a tendency to, you know, and what do they say? Monotony is it kills drive, you know, is the killer of motivation. So I, if it's too monotonous and it's too repetitive, I lose my incentive. So I play with a lot of stuff. I like to dabble and mix stuff, and like mixed martial arts, you know, you use that as an example. I like doing that. I like throwing, you know, all these different modalities together and making every session that's specifically breath work different, that no two really are the same. I like that. I like that kind of that keeps the body guessing. But the pool work that we do a lot of breath holding, you know, breath holding effort breath holding, where we're working. There's some danger with breath holding in the water that I know people that have passed from it. If you do any hyperventilation or CO2 scrubbing or any kind of stuff like that, I think there's a danger to going conscious, which, you know, it's not bad if you do that on the pool deck or in your living room. But when you do that in the water you're not being observed, then it's, you know, you have the shallow water blackout. And so that's something that we really avoid. And, you know, I actually like using the fear threshold or that mechanism that really creates urgency. I keep that present and try not to get too calm and bring everything too down and get so that you don't kind of lose that need to breathe. I think that's it's a self-protecting mechanism that we've had, that I think that we had to learn how to trick it in order to override it. Otherwise you'd be limited by the volume of that and the time that you could hold your breath. So I think I like the exploration of it. I call it exploration breathing. You know, it's like just exploring it and then, you know, always being conscious of it, you know, being conscious of when I'm in my, you know, when I'm sleeping, that I'm nose breathing when I'm sleeping and when I'm on an airplane or when I'm, you know, just in general, just kind of always trying to bring consciousness back to my breath, really think concentrating on really expanding and trying to create, you know, more volume in the rib cage and have movement, you know, create movement, not like get all hard and stiff and you can barely breathe. So just all of that, all of that consciousness, bring all the consciousness and awareness to your breath on a daily basis. So, you know, if you said, what kind of training do I do? I'm thinking about it every day. You know, I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to implement it in stress. I'm trying to implement it in, you know, in sport, which there's a form of stress, and in working out, and just in all aspects.
Yeah. Have you heard of James Nestor? He wrote the book Breath that came out recently. Fantastic. He uses the term pulmonaut, which I really like, which is like astronaut for me, but explorer of breath. I really like that term. So any advice for me in terms of when I do breath holds, an extreme panic comes over after a certain period of time, not when I'm holding, interestingly. So if I do an exhale out breath hold, and this is part of the Oxygen Advantage training, when it comes time then to start taking some gentle breaths in through the nose, a lot of panic comes in, even though I'm saying to myself, you don't need any more oxygen. You're full of oxygen. There's just this huge amount of panic. Have you got any advice on how we can kind of get through that stage of panic?
You know, I mean, obviously part of that is just training.
Yeah.
I mean, that's doing it. And the more you do it and the more, the less urgency that panic, it starts to lose its power. Is what I believe. I think over time. And so when you push, you know, I call it the wall, you know, when you arrive at the wall, you know, that's that panic or that urgency or that need, you know, the more times you push against that wall, the wall moves a little bit.
Yes.
And then you push against it and it moves a little bit. And I think, you know, on some days it's way up in front and other days it's a little further back, but it's still the same wall. I think when you get a relationship with that, it loses some of its power Absolutely. I think it's the mechanism itself is there for a reason. And I think if you completely lost that, that urgency,
yes,
I think that could be dangerous.
Yes.
I think that if you got to a position where you could just override the urgency consistently, indefinitely, then you just pretty much, you'd be able, and there are people that can do that. You can just hold your breath till you go unconscious. So, the fact that it happens when you still need a lot of oxygen, I don't think that's bad. I think it's just about you having a better relationship. I think that the sensation is obviously important. There's a reason why you're not just having it for no reason. And so I think to develop a relationship with that, I think is important. And I think using the fact that you always have time, that you realize that when you start to go, that no matter how urgent it is, you do have more time. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps too, as you begin to develop that relationship, that I think knowing that you have more time, and you can deal with the discomfort, I think that helps you kind of be there a little easier.
No, that's good. I also like just the way you use the word urgency as opposed to panic, because just saying panic is making me panic. Oh my God, I'm panicking. But if the urgency is there. So, and when you were talking, you reminded me of my first ice bath at Wim's house. And there was panic or urgency to get out of that water at that particular point. But yeah, you're right. That wall for me has moved quite far now. I can go into a frozen lake and do 5 minutes, no problem. But the urgency of the breath holds was so much that I've actually backed away a little bit. So I think it's about me facing that. That's interesting.
And you made a good point too, which is I think it's important when we change our relationship with it, all of a sudden, and you said it, it's an urgency, not a panic, right? So again, that's a way, I have a saying in the ice, I have a mantra, this is my house and this is where I live. Like you get there and you're like, yeah, this is my house. This is where I live. Like, I'm good here. And so I think when we do that, I think that's important. Cause if you start off going, I had a lady once come up to me and ask me for a surf lesson. And she goes, cause I really suck. I'm terrible. And I go, okay, well, repeat after me. And she goes, what do you mean? I go, just repeat after me. And so I go, I don't suck. And she goes, I don't suck. And I go, that's your first lesson. I think that if we can put it on ourselves, if we say, hey, we're terrible, I can't do that, there's nowhere to go. Where are we going to go from? If I'm terrible, if you've decided to say that you're terrible and you can't do something, you don't have any, there's no, you could say, hey, I'm new at this. I'm a beginner, whatever, or this is uncomfortable, but there's ways to kind of retitle things and again, is the glass half empty or half full? I mean, it's, you just gotta, if it's half empty, then you're like, oh my gosh, it's half empty. If it's half full, you're like, yeah, it's half full.
it's that conscious subconscious mind, I think, as well, around, that language you're repeating to yourself. Oh, I suck at this. I'm rubbish. It's going somewhere, isn't it?
And going right into the, into the image maker.
Yeah, and it stays there and it comes back later. I like that. It's all back to that, be kind to yourself, give yourself some positive reinforcement. Okay. Nose versus diaphragm. One of the benefits I get of this podcast, I get to speak to people like you all over the world that have got, history and knowledge of breathing and different ideas and suggestions. Which do you think is more of a priority in terms of, let's get your belly moving, let's get your diaphragm moving? No, let's deal with the nose. I know it's all important, but is there one over the other, or would you not look at it like that?
Well, I mean, I think the diaphragm has such a huge impact on your organs, and I think you can't really draw the air through your nose unless you use the diaphragm. So, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the air is getting pulled through those holes. The nose are just some holes that the air is getting pulled through from the diaphragm. So, I mean, and again, the science of it, but it just makes sense to me that the more you can use the diaphragm, and well, first of all, it's impacting the organs, and also it's impacting the heart, the way the heart beats.
Right.
So as there's pressure on the heart, the heart going to beat faster, and it, you know, and as it expands, it's going to slow down. So there's a whole relationship to the diaphragm and the heart, the diaphragm and the organs, and, you know, and the sinuses and the whole, you know, I mean, there's just so many things going on. I think that if you try to work on concentration, if you try to think about volume and trying to increase volume, and then also increase effort, like the ability to drive with power, you think about the air that way, like, hey, I'm pulling it in, I'm pushing it out, you know, stuff like that. I think that that's probably, you know, I think that that'll have a more, that'll, that, I mean, first you just go, hey, you got to breathe through your nose. And for a lot of people, that's just a traumatic concept, because yeah, it's like, you just, you don't get enough volume, but you need the ribs, you know, you need the, I mean, you look at people that are highly fit and then yet the rib cages can't move, the abdominal can't move, but they're what we consider to be physical representations of being, you know, fit, like healthy, and yet the air can barely move, like the air, like they can't even increase the, you know, the ribs won't move, the diaphragm yes. doesn't move, the stomach so tight that, you know, you tighten and flex everything as hard as you can, then try to breathe, I mean, your air is reduced in half, if not more. So I mean, I think there's, you know, there's a reason why the Buddha had a belly. At the same time, I think there's a vanity side of things where you're like, oh yeah, I want to be, you know, fit and everything. But for me, I just feel like that function is first, and then we'll go, you know, and we'll go from there. But let's get into the function of how the system works and the diaphragm and the way the ribs work. I mean, it's I think for most people, it's just do any kind of breathing, just knock your, whatever it is, just bring your mind to it and implement some. And then as you go and you want to be, you know, it's like do some movement, and then you can be, you know, and if you really are into it, then, you know, work towards being a black belt, but that's something else. Yes. That's a different game, you know, in the beginning, I think it's just more about doing something.
Do something. Yeah. That's great advice in life in general, isn't it? I remember watching once, I was like, oh, I can't do a workout today. I haven't got enough time to go and do, you know, an hour. Yeah. And then a couple of months went by during COVID, and I was like, I haven't done anything since the gym closed down and the Jits place closed down. And I was like, yeah, but it needs to be a perfect workout. And then I remembered those words from a YouTube video, just do something, even if it's just 10 press ups or something. Yep. Just go and move. Yeah. Something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's easy. Yeah, because we have an idealism, you know, we have a thing about how an idealistic point of view that forces us to go, hey, I'm not gonna do anything if I can't do it this, you know, this other, the right way. And, you know, or the right volume, or whatever has been constructed to represent what that means. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important for us to just remember, like, you know, a little here, a little there eventually makes a big pile, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I love that. I recently watched my video back of me doing a breathwork exercise, and it was a nasal breathwork exercise that somebody was doing with me on a podcast like this. And my shoulders were going up like this. And then I had a podcast with another breathwork expert, and they were saying, I think it was called like paradoxical breathing. Yeah. So any advice on how I can get the diaphragm moving a bit more? Because I think for the last 20 years, I've been sucking my gut in, trying to hide it. And so now I'm a bit conditioned about it now.
Six back abs, yeah. Got to have a flat, ripped stomach that you can't move. Yeah. You know, I guess part of it is, I mean, in yoga, they talk about the Mula Bandha. You know, you talk about the Mula Bandha, you talk about the floor, the pelvic floor. You know, you can your groin, but you think about pushing down, you know, down into that area. And that, and I, like, somebody gave me a great description about, you know, expanding in all four directions, that yes. you're expanding in all, that you're expanding sideways and front and back, and that everything's expanding in all four directions. And I think that's a nice description to implement into your thoughts, to put into your movement, you know, like, think about that you know, because a lot of times people think about taking a breath, they think about going like they're like, but it's all this like up on top. It's like they fill the, they, well, because this creates space, right? So that's part of the reason why people lift the shoulders, is because you get a little more, it creates more and more space, especially if everything's tight down below. It's just the lungs going to just fill up wherever it's the easiest place to go, right? Mm-hmm. So it's wherever it's, it has the easy, because the, what do they say? The lung is flexible enough to cover a football field. That's how elastic it is. So the lung is very elastic. And so, you know, I always describe it like a, if you took a, my favorite description is if you took a balloon and you put it in a bird cage. So we have a balloon, but it's in a bird cage. Well, the balloon could get this big, but if the balloon cage is this big, right, the balloon cannot get any bigger if it's in the cage than the cage is. So we need to think about expanding the cage, whatever that looks like. So if it's out, out the lung, you know, out the stomach, out the, through the back, right? Any up in your ears. I mean, I don't care where it goes, but you think about creating, increasing volume, you know, that's a, because we know that there's nothing bad about that. Right. And I believe you can use the lung to help increase volume by filling up and then trying to keep, you know, you can use a sipping breath where you, and you just keep sipping it in, just trying to create space. I think that over time will create more volume as well. I think there's ways to build volume that way. I think, I mean, there's a lot of games around it, you know, there's a lot of, and the good news is there's no really right or wrong way. I think there's some science, obvious science. We know, you know, oxygen CO2 relationship, and we know nitric oxide from the sinuses for, you know, oxygen absorption from Patrick's work. We know the benefits of that. I mean, we know, so there's certain foundational things that we know are better. And then there's a, and then it's, you know, then it's go explore, make it your own. Yeah. I mean, it is your own breath at the end of the day. So might as well make it your own.
Yeah. You know? I was watching one of your clips earlier where you were taking somebody through a breathing exercise, and it looked a bit similar to Wim Hof. And at the end, you were saying, squeeze. What's the benefit of the squeeze? What's going on there at the end of the kind of 20 or 30 breaths?
That particular pattern Wim showed me. I think there's a certain, when you put pressure on the system, you drive, probably I can only imagine that you drive oxygen into places it doesn't normally go. Mm-hmm. You know, that like it, you probably push stuff, you know, and there's a bunch of, you know, like I said, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know all the actual physical things. I just know the sensations that you feel. And we used to do that. I mean, you know, when we were kids, we used to do that. We would do that stuff, and it was weird. It was almost like you intuitively knew when you were a kid, like we'd breathe in a paper bag and then try to, you know, squeeze yourself till you knocked out or something. That was like a game, but maybe that was something that, you know, was in us. It's been passed down that there's some benefits from, but I know that you feel the sensations of that. And, you know, like I said, part of it could be that you're driving blood into area, you know, that oxygenated blood into areas that it just normally doesn't get pushed. Mm-hmm. I think just with the way the system is, the corners don't always get touched, you know, and in your brain for sure, because it's so vascular as well.
That's interesting. So talking of Wim then a little bit. So when I was in Poland, we were in a group, I think there were 60 of us in total, and we were put into three groups, and I was with 20 people, and we spent the week together and would see Wim every day. And we do a lot of collective breath work, which I know you do. So we had 20 of us huffing and puffing for about 90 minutes. And in that time, I went through a series of emotions. I was crying, I was laughing. But where it got really interesting, there was two things that I experienced, which talking now 4 years later seems a bit weird. One was I had some very powerful visuals. I've never done any medicine, any psychedelics. I've never done any plant medicines. I hope to one day. But I had some quite extreme visuals of an eye. And I was almost, it sounds bizarre to say, but I was communicating with this eye, and it was kind of saying to me, oh, I'm so glad you got here. everything's okay. And I was like, all right, brilliant. And then it went, right, see you later. And there was no kind of words being exchanged. And then the eye went. And then a little bit after that, one of the guys had gone through some real trauma in that group. And we were all, I didn't feel sad, but I was crying with him. And yeah, we were all crying for this guy. And to this date, it's the most powerful experience. Again, I've never done any psychedelics. I've got nothing to compare it to. But it was an extremely powerful thing that when I talk about it now, it almost doesn't feel real because it's been so long ago and I haven't experienced it since because it was a big group setting. Can you talk a bit about some experiences maybe you've had around that or maybe what you think might be going on there? Because I'd love to get your thoughts on some of that.
Well, I think from what I understand, there are some definitely some DMT, natural DMT, that your brain produces. It's something that your brain produces when you die, or at least you think you're dying.
Yes.
And I think there, and we know that the body produces a bunch of other chemicals and hormones when we are pushing the system. You know, I've had visual experiences and been involved in big groups with a lot of emotions and people breaking down and all, just a bunch of different things that happened in that. You know, I feel one of the, I think a big part of it is that breath and spirit are very connected. And that if before there was machines that kept us alive, that, you know, the baby came out and if it wasn't breathing, it got a spank and then it took a breath. Yeah. And then that was when the spirit went into the purse, to the vessel, or however you describe it. And then when you die, you know, the breath leaves and the spirit leaves. In a lot of indigenous cultures, the breath and the spirit are one. And so the breath is actually the spirit. And so they talk about that. The Polynesian culture, for example, they call it the breath of life,
right,
which it's the spirit. So the spirit and the breath. So my point is that the relationship between the spirit, spiritual or the spirit, if you believe in that, and the breath are synonymous. They're together.
Right.
And so when you play with the breath like that, possibly there's maybe something going on. And again, this is just stuff that I kind of, you know, I don't profess to know one way or the other or believe one way or the other, but it's only what would make kind of more as a mathematician, what would make sense to me. If I put math to it, it would make sense that maybe at times the body's senses, it might be going, like it might be departing, like, okay, hey, there might be a departure because of the nature of what's happening with the breath, that the breath all of a sudden allows the spirit to kind of, because really maybe the spirit, the breath is what keeps the spirit attached to the vessel.
Mm.
And so if that makes any sense, and I don't know. And then, like I said, when you look at, you know, in nature, when an animal or any living being stops breathing, that's usually the end.
Yes.
Right. That's the finished. It's over. And that's when when it's born, when it takes a breath is when it starts to live. So and then maybe when you're in those groups of people and you have that intensity, and then you have physical things, you know, happen, hormonal things, that stuff happening in your brain, chemicals being produced in your brain, all these epinephrine, endorphin, and blah, blah, and just all these, you know, things that are causing you to feel sensations, which would create some heavy emotional stuff. Have visions, which again, DMT or something like that, that you naturally produce in your brain.
Yes.
So I think, I mean, that's the only, and again, I'm not a scientist, there's probably scientists that could give you all the thing. That's just only what made sense to me, why it would be that way. Cause I'm not so mystical in that sense. I'm not like, mystical kind of, but I'm more practical. But at the same time, I think that to not think that there's a connection between spirit and breath, that's not you, then you're not really actually looking around and observing things correctly, is what I would say.
It's really interesting, because that's one of the reasons I asked that question at the start around why can we consciously control our breath? And I'm very practical as well, quite agnostic. I'm not really sure what's going on, but that was probably the only time I would describe myself as having some sort of spiritual experience. And I've tried to get there by myself, and it's not the same. It's not the same as being a group. And of course, Wim's a tour de force by himself as well. So having him around, the level of something on there as well.
There's something to be said about when you're by yourself, you have to orchestrate the patterns. And when you're in a group and it's being led normally, that allows you to disconnect from that, which allows you to go further away. Because when you have to, when you're retaining patterns and you're having to be conscious of those things in order to conduct when you do it to yourself, for example, or if you're leading a group, my sessions when I'm leading are much different than when I'm participating. Participating is substantially different than being led. Yes. And so I think it's a little bit like, the conductor doesn't get to get into the note, right? He's conducting that's a whole different experience. And it's hard to do when you're self-conducting yourself. Then it's hard. You don't really get to totally release. And relinquish that piece of conscious awareness that would stop you actually from going deeper.
Yeah, there's definitely a group energy going on there. It's something. Although recently I took part in a breathwork session online, and the chap had mixed up the music. He was a DJ as well. He does something called Soma breathwork. Okay. And that was an experience on a new level for me, because it was rhythmic breathing. I think it was two in, two out. And the music was changing. And I guess it's a bit like holotropic. It was getting more intense. And that was a lovely experience to have by yourself, actually. That was really good. But when I try and just do the breathing, especially with the mouth, I always found it a chore. But when I do, say, Wim Hof with my nose, or I do the Soma with my nose, I find it a much more pleasant experience. And I still get some visuals, nothing near what I had before, but some colors maybe.
Well, first of all, nitric oxide is a vasodilator. So that whole, what your sinuses are doing when you're nose breathing is going to be substantially more beneficial than I have a feeling that because I've had, along the way, it's hard to reenact that some of those beginning experiences.
Yes.
Part of it is, I just think that you're, not that you fully, you release differently, but I think you're just a little more sensitive until you've started. Once you've done it a little while or started to do it, I think you lose some of that initial sensation that you get when you're new at it, when you're fresh,
That's very true. And when you see the comments on Facebook or anywhere to do with Wim Hof, that's the thing. People are trying to, it's almost like hunting that high, that first high that you get. That's really good. I'd be really interested if I went back and did it again in Poland with 60 people, what that would be like. But I think you're right. There is definitely you're more susceptible to it, and it's all new experience. And that actually, if I switch gears a little bit now and talk about thermogenesis, that was the same for the cold for me. That first cold pool at Wim's house. What an experience. And I chase that all the time.
Well, I think that's a human condition. I think that the unknown always has a little mysticism to it. That once you, it's like going someplace you've never been. It always seems to take a long time. And then when you've done it a bunch of times, it just gets shorter and shorter.
Yes.
And so in a way, it's some of that, right? There's something to it that has to do with that mechanism, I think, that's consistent no matter and then that's why you got to do more or go faster or whatever, just so you're trying to seek that out. Yeah. Or just you know, or just go do new things, which kind of, you can do that again. They just won't be the same in that field, you know?
When you were on Joe Rogan, you were talking about, he was talking about cravings, and you were talking about, yeah, but there's, you know, there's good cravings and our system has been hijacked, and you were talking about sugar and he was craving, you know, nice, healthy foods. I crave the sauna. I don't know why it is. And this COVID has been a nightmare for so many reasons, but one of the main ones for me, and I know I'm sounding like I've got nothing to complain about, I can't go to a sauna. There's no saunas that are open. And I've had no sauna for 5 months. Any thoughts on why maybe we would, I mean, maybe you're the same, maybe you crave that sort of conditioning, and if you didn't get it, you might feel a bit antsy as well. I don't know. What do you think?
Craving the sauna? I know the feeling.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, because it has a profound effect on your system.
Yeah.
And your body craves it because it's good for it. Your body's like really appreciates what that, and it, you know, it can be, I mean, I use it, an example would think about sleeping. I mean, you know, it's like, if you don't sleep, man, you want to sleep, like you need to sleep. And in a way, you know, the sauna is obviously not as important as sleeping, but there's the same kind of relationship. Mm. Like, hey, you know, I need this. The body, if the body's craving it, and it's not like a giant piece of chocolate with some, you know, whipped cream on it or something. Like, you know, I think I just, you brought it up, but, you know, I just think that craving mechanism is in us for a reason. Mm. And it wasn't based on negativity. I think we now correlate cravings with negativity because we've done things, we do things that aren't good for us that we really want to do. But that actual mechanism, I think, is connected more to doing things for us that are good for us that we need, than it is to actually that it's, you know, oh, I crave, you know, ice cream, or I crave something. Like, yeah, okay, that's true, but you learn that. Mm. That was the learned thing. And so you could just as easily crave, you know, having a giant salad, or crave, you know, some other kind of, something else that was really good for you too. Yeah. So I just think that mechanism can be distorted, and because it's connected to, you know, things that aren't good for us, that we think, oh, well, every time I have that feeling, it must be I want something that's not good for me. Well, yeah, no, that's a biological pattern that we have. That craving, you know, that you crave certain things. I mean, I think that's one of our tools.
Yeah, it's recently been given a bit of a bad term, hasn't it? And I've even heard that food manufacturers will use the word craveability instead of addiction. You know, how much craveability, how much sugar can we put in here to make it? So yeah, so it has that kind of negative connotation. But yeah, it's interesting the way you flip it around.
They capitalized on it, you know? They capitalized on that. They knew we had that mechanism. They're like, well, just like we know sugar in that sweet in nature is safe. So when you're in nature and something's sweet, it means it's safe to eat. It means it's safe. Mm. There's nothing, there's no poison that's sweet. Like it's like, I mean, we make poison that's sweet, but in nature, things that are sweet are safe. And so somebody learned that one fast and like, all we have to do is make it sweet and we can put things that aren't even good for you in it. Yeah. And the sweet will override people's ability. Because if you gave people a lot of the stuff that people eat that is disguised with sugar, if you gave them that naturally, they would spit it out. They wouldn't eat it. They would be like, oh, I don't, that stuff, that's not good for me. And so I think we underestimate, ultimately, I think we underestimate the system, the how sophisticated the human palate is, the human system. We underestimate it, you know, and we don't give it enough credit because we've tricked it. And so we thought, well, how good can it be if we can manipulate it? Yes. It's still pretty, it's pretty amazing what it can do. And so I think we're just learning, just like if breathing and breathing through your nose and all this breath work is an example, and that's just breathing, then how more sophisticated is your palate and nutrition? And how, I mean, or, and I wouldn't say more, because first of all, in, you know, in the scheme of existence, air and oxygen is the most important, right? Without no breath, no life. You got a couple, 7 minutes, start to get brain damage. I mean, you can go a long time without eating, and you can go longer without eating. Drinking's next, but it's, the line of the it's air, water, food, right? But the system and the sophistication of the the palate and nutrition, it's pretty amazing. They did a study about tomatoes.
Right.
And they were trying to make the best tasting tomato. So they had all these different types of tomatoes, all these different farming techniques to grow these tomatoes. And at the end, they came up with the tomato that was the best tasting tomato. And they're like, this is the best tomato. Everybody agreed. Okay. That's the best tasting one. That tomato was the one that had the most nutrient density. And it was also the one that was grown in the most nutrient dense soil.
Right.
And that was just fact. Like, it wasn't the tricky, scientifically grown, hydroponic, heirloom, GMO. I mean, it wasn't any of that. So it just shows you that if we get more in touch with our biology, there's a great Paul Check, who's somebody who I appreciate his work and dedication to health and wellness. And, he said, you're your own greatest doctor. At the end of the day, you are the greatest doctor you'll ever know. And there's a lot of truth to that, because no one knows you like you do. It's just that people have become so disconnected from themselves, and breath is one of the examples, that they're incapable of even understanding the medicine that they need for themselves. But it's there. And I think breath work is one of the, one of the foundational aspects of that, because if the system's properly oxygenated, and we have higher levels of CO2 tolerance and so on, and we have the vasodilation from nitric oxide, I think that those other systems will operate at a higher frequency as well.
Yeah, I think there's an intuition problem we face there sometimes, because we're so jacked up with technology and high sugar foods. So recently I've got into stretching, and I'm talking only over the last 4 weeks. I recently finished David Goggins' book, Can't Hurt Me. And I was like, oh, I've got some of the problems he's got. I my mobility is awful. I'm not even 40 yet, and I can barely get my hands behind my head. So I've really got heavy into stretching. And suddenly you're so much more aware of all these different parts of your body. You think, oh, I can feel my calves are really tight. I never even noticed that before. But I think a lot of people are so jacked up with all these different things. I believe what you're saying is right. You can be your own doctor, but you're not listening to yourself because you've got all these distractions going on. What can people do? Any advice there? I know it's easy to say, put the phone down, meditate, but it's hard, isn't it, for people to kind of go from, three screens sometimes, TVs on, laptops on your lap, and you're looking at your phone, and to go from that to going, let's do something a bit mindful, go for a walk in nature, or, go into the ocean. Any advice you would give there on how people can kind of just reduce the stimulus a little bit?
Well, I mean, you said a lot of them right there. I mean, I think it's important to keep, to keep remembering, first of all, what an amazing thing nature is, because we're nature. Mm-hmm. So when you really, let's look and be in awe of what nature is. Let's look at it and just be aware of it, because we are nature. Like, we're from it. So,
yes.
I mean, listen, I think that the breathing, the drinking good water, having being hydrated. I mean, I just think there's some real fundamental things people can do, the truth of it is I think that, and not eating so much too, that could be helpful. Not that, just take a little break now and then, from eating and feel what it's like to, be hungry, and cause that's good for you. That's good for you. And I think people need to make a conscious effort to try to consume information that is beneficial. So like you turn on the TV or the news, or you're on the computer and you're looking at all this stuff and you're like, is this beneficial for me personally? Like when I'm watching it, like, mm-hmm. because that guy did this and something happened to them and this thing and all that. It's like, is this really beneficial for me? Mm-hmm. How about look at some things that are beneficial for you? Like look mm-hmm. to consume, watch things, read things, eat things, you know, that are, could be beneficial. That could be actually beneficial to you personally and your body, like in your, you know, I think that is because that's a big piece of it. I think the consumption of, you can't, everything has a repercussion, right? So there's for every, you know, there's an action, an equal opposite reaction. Everything has a consequence, right? A reaction. You can't be exposed to all of this consistent negativity and consume negative energy, everything's negative, and then think that, wow, I'm going to be positive about it. Just be positive. It's like, yeah, no, that's just, I mean, you know, you can't help but be drugged down a little bit if you're constantly being bombarded by the consistent negative energy that's being promoted. And so yes. I think it's important just to make a little effort of like, hey, you know what, maybe not every second, but just, hey, why, you know, why listen to a podcast, read a book, you know, do something that actually is really, you know, is working towards your betterment, right? Working towards you being you. And I didn't say richer. I didn't say, you know, more prettier. I didn't say, you know, in better shape. I just mean working in your interest to, you know, in your interest to, you know, to be, to feel better, to be healthier, to, you know, to something that's going to help promote that. It's going to help do something to help your sleep, make you sleep better. Like yes. I figure out how to sleep better. Like, hey, you're not sleeping good. Figure it out. Like make your room dark, make it cold. Do something before you go to bed that helps you go to sleep, or take a hot bath. I mean, whatever it is, but you know, just try to nurture the system a little bit. I think that's something that we're just not. And I think because we've made everything so complicated, it takes so long. It takes so many hours a day and a week just to survive in this so-called convenient system that we've created. You know, where they say it took 30 some hours and when we were hunting and gathering, and now it takes like, you know, 50 hours a week to just survive. It's like somehow within the conveniences, we've made it, you know, more stressful, more difficult. No one's sleeping. Everybody's dehydrated. No one's breathing right. I mean, just go down the list. It's like, just choose one or two of them and start someplace. I think, you know, and you said it earlier about working out. It's like, hey, it doesn't have to be like a 2-hour CrossFit training, like watch how much I can lift and how many reps I can do. How about just do a little thing, listen to a little thing, hear a little thing, you know, read a little thing, eat something maybe that doesn't taste great, but you know, it's good for you or something, you know, just do something to support and nurture.
Yeah. Yeah, wise words. And yeah, it comes back to just do something. And when you mentioned podcasts earlier, it reminds me, it was about 6 years ago, I discovered this guy called Joe Rogan on YouTube. And everything for me changed from that point, because I was a guy that would just wake up in the morning, put on the news, watch the news on my phone, news app, news, stressed all day, not knowing much about anything. Suddenly this guy is talking about jiu-jitsu. He's got Wim Hof on there. He's got Matthew Walker, the sleep expert, on there. And suddenly I was like, oh my God, there's all these amazing people on the planet. But if you're used to just consuming mass media, you don't really get a lot of that, especially not 3-hour conversations. So yeah, good advice.
Lose hope too. If you watch a lot of what's being promoted, it's a hope killer. Yeah. It kills your hope. You know, where if you start investigating, there's some amazing people out there in the world, and there's some amazing things to do and to learn, and I think that's where hope comes out of, right? It comes out of all of that kind of amazement and what do they say? Retain your youthful enthusiasm, be like a kid, and then you'll be hopeful, because kids are hopeful because they're interested and they're excited. If you lose your interest and your excitement, you lose your hope.
Yeah, Yeah, it's like curiosity, isn't it? I noticed as I was down my corporate journey, I just lost my curiosity, and I've it's come back now, because once I discovered breath work, I was like, oh my God, what's going on? The visuals and all these different feelings and all these people and all this craziness, jumping into ice baths and climbing mountains in your shorts. And I was like, this is a whole other world. That's not a corporate world here. So yeah, curiosity, hopefulness, and yeah, just think, yeah, that childlike wonder of the planet. I love that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Last couple of quick fire questions for you, Laird, then just to close us off. So when it comes to sauna, long and medium to hot temperature, or really bloody hot and a short, or is it somewhere in between? Because for me, I'm never sure. Should it be? Which one?
I'm doing a bunch of different variations. I do, Rhonda Patrick talks about, I did like a 1 hour low heat for 1 hour straight.
Yep.
I do some medium ones for kind of, and then I do some crazy, super burning hot ones. Sometimes I'm doing an activity in a short length, high intense heat activity in different segments. But breaking it up and making it interesting. And the ice is the same way.
Yeah.
I'll do cardio before I do the ice. I'll do drills where I do a minute on an assault bike or a rowing machine, and then a minute in the ice, and you go back and forth between those two. Sometimes I'll do heat and ice, sometimes I'll do heat and then some kind of training and then another kind of heat. I use heat a lot to warm up before I exercise. Mm-hmm. I use heat a lot to, at the end of the day, to kind of finish the day off and clean my system out. No real rhyme or reason,
Yeah.
Break it up and keep it interesting.
Okay, then that's good. So it's almost a bit like running. So there's some sprints you might do in the water, in the hot sauna, but there might be go for a nice medium paced run in a medium heat. Okay, now that's really good. And if you can't get access to a sauna, is a hot bath the next best thing? Or have you ever tried those sauna suits where it looks like a sleeping bag and you zip yourself up?
I think I'd rather take a hot bath.
Yeah.
Like it said to me, hey, a nice hot bath, because water is so dense that it really penetrates. I mean, if you sit in a hot bath for 20 minutes, you'll come out, you'll be sweating. Like you'll be thoroughly penetrated. I guess those sauna suits work if you don't have them, but I would prefer a nice, either a jacuzzi, a hot bath, just a hot bath, nice hot bath, sit in there and feel it.
Yeah, no, I love that. Question about turmeric for you. So I'm taking these little capsules at the minute, just because I've read good anti-inflammatory benefits. But then I started questioning, actually, because I was speaking to this chap in the health food shop, and he goes, no, you need a lot. If you're going to have turmeric, you need a lot of turmeric for it to have some benefits. And I was like, oh, I don't know now. So could you just give some advice on, should it be fresh? Should I be boiling it with some fat and some black pepper? Should it be a capsule? Lost.
I think anytime you can get fresh, the better.
Yep.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, if you can get that, there's some nice powdered turmerics. Of course, absorption's always better with fats or, black pepper, obviously is another one that people use to help absorption. The good thing about turmeric is it can be something that you can consistently do on a regular basis. So on a daily basis, and you don't really over saturate the system. Mm-hmm. So you could just build up over time. We know it's really good. There's some great liquid like shots that you can do, turmeric shots and stuff like that. We can have golden milk. I mean, golden milks are crazy good, whether you have some kind of, coconut almond milk, some kind of milk with a turmeric in it and heated at the end of the day, those are great. Mm. They use those a lot in India. And of course, turmeric is really good for gut health. So other than being a very powerful anti-inflammatory, which is probably why it's good for your gut too, but it's, and turmeric is the sister of ginger. So ginger and turmeric are identical plants. And so, and a similar type of root too. So yeah, I just think turmeric's just another one of those, one of those things to start, incorporating into your diet, like breath work and sleeping good. And it's just one of those things that you can use. You can use the whole root and cut it and use it in cooking. I mean, there's no end to it.
Yeah. And ginger is, we're talking about craveability. I love ginger. I love fresh ginger shots. It just makes me feel so, I'm lacking something and I need that ginger. Okay, Laird, thank you. Where can people find you if they want to know more?
Well, I mean, I think you can go to lairdhamilton.com. You can go to, you know, on Facebook or, you know, just the normal stuff. I mean, I got some nice, I have a film out called Take Every Wave that was on Netflix, I think. It's been on, I think it's on Apple TV or something, documentary that we did. And I've been in a bunch of other films. We just recently had a great foiling thing at Nazaré, which was a hydrofoil surfing on a giant wave in Portugal. And there's just, yeah, I mean, I think you just go on there, it's the internet. You just go on there and punch it in and start exploring. And, you know, I'm, I don't spend a ton of time on that.
But good for you.
Yeah, you got to focus on, go where your strengths are. So yeah. I'm trying to stay in the ocean at this point.
Yeah, no, good for you. I have to say, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, my dream would have been big screen, game console. Now, I hate screens. I've been staring at screens for 5 months.
Blue blockers. So. Get the blue blockers out.
Yeah. I've actually got the red ones that block out the green as well. They're pretty good. Yeah. Wonderful. Okay. Well, once again, thank you so much. Guys, thank you so much for watching. Please like, comment, subscribe, and share. Make sure you check out Laird. I'll put some of his links below so you can go off there and check out some more. Absolutely one of my favorite conversations I've had on this podcast. So thank you so much, Laird. And guys, have a great day. Cheers, everybody.
Thank you.